Welcome to the 12th episode of the It's Been Said podcast. I'm your host, SAI Executive Director Lisa Ramey. Each show is dedicated to conversations on leadership as we further SAI's mission to support, encourage, and develop Iowa's educational leaders and learners. We're excited this month to welcome Chris Byam. Chris joined the Iowa Workforce Development Team in September of 2021. To expand and innovate employer and high school registered apprenticeships across the state. He has been championing school reform since 2006. From his early start as a business educator in the Des Moines Public Schools to becoming the principal at Boone High School, Chris's vision has been focused on the design thinking model and family engagement that affirms transformational education for all students. Through his work, he has brought a new vision of practice and policy to the forefront of K-12 education in Iowa. He led his team at Boone High School in the development of a work-based learning program called The Edge, a program where all students are afforded the opportunity of a hands-on experience at different careers, regardless of interests, passions, and talents. The Boone Edge provided a continuum of support for work-based learning, transforming the outcomes for each individual student. Welcome, Chris. So, Chris, SAI annual conference keynote speaker Mark Perna proposed, if you want to have a conversation about career, you have to start with lifestyle. How might you encourage this with students?
I think it's really important for districts and students to really start honing in on career core skills at a young age. I think it's so important to build good habits, and starting to do that at a young age is such a vital part for their lives. I know that I keep talking to my kids about those type of things, is creating those habits that will withstand the test of time, and that all industry personnel are kind of looking for. And I think that's where we've had some really great experiences through my administrative career and my teaching career. Is those were the type of things that I was really trying to hone in on for my students so that they could be successful post-secondary.
So, Chris, you mentioned habits. Can you expand a little bit on what habits are you talking about or referencing?
I think industry, if you talk to industry leaders, they're all looking for many of the same type of core skills, whether it's collaboration, communication, self-awareness, a global awareness, the employability skills. I think all of those pieces are the habits that employers are looking for to be successful. It doesn't matter whether or not you go to college post-secondary, or you're in the military, or you're doing a registered apprenticeship or whatnot, but those skills are ones that industry's looking for. They'll teach you the other pieces, the other components for their specific occupation. But those habits that are built over time, I think, are the things that are so important right now for our workforce.
Yeah, thank you for sharing those. So we know, Chris, that today's young people are talented and resourceful. So how can schools, specifically pre-K through 12 schools, help students understand their passions and how it may connect to a career field and how important those other skills that you just mentioned are to their success in their careers?
I think the main thing for school districts in general is, once again, you're building those habits through a continuum of work. But I think the ultimate goal is to create as many options as possible for students, opening as many doors. I think the conversation has shifted where we're looking more for, it's not necessarily that students are going to a four-year college, that they have various options that are all very equal when you're looking at moving on in your life. Right now you can have some very successful careers in welding and robotics that can tie into a registered apprenticeship program. The nursing programs can tie into registered apprenticeship programs. There's multiple avenues in and out of careers. And so understanding that First of all, students need to be able to be flexible. They need to be able to problem solve. They need to be innovative and creative within the space that they're looking at. But being able to be nimble, and that there's a variety of on-ramps and off-ramps for careers. You know, jobs are ever changing. We're kind of in an evolution period where we're away, kind of getting away from the Industrial Revolution, and we're in that technological revolution. And so having those type of habits and that understanding, I think industry and workforce is looking for those areas.
So Chris, from your seat, so at that state level in Iowa workforce development, what's going well in this area when you consider careers, apprenticeships, all that you're talking about? What's going well?
Well, I would say that we're continuing to progress when we're looking at pre-apprenticeships and apprenticeships. There are a lot of opportunities. There's 1,500 occupations that you can choose from when it comes to a registered apprenticeship programs. And so I think that's a really good place to start. I think it's really important to continue the conversation that there are multiple options out there, whether it's 2-year, 4-year military, registered apprenticeship, pre-apprenticeship, or internships. All those things need to be available for our students. And so we continue to talk about work-based learning. You know, we want to continue to evolve. And I think we can see a lot of different school districts that are very successful in that space, that are really looking at a variety of different options so that students can go into different fields, explore different fields. But I think the other thing to think about is how can that evolve towards younger students so that they get some of the shadows in the career exploration younger. And then as they move into high school, there's a little bit more training so that there's a path after graduation.
And where do you think, on the reverse of that, where do you think there's more opportunity yet to be had in our state?
I think the next move is really tying into authentic work-based learning and the training aspects within a high school. I think we can do even better when it comes to those things. And that's where I talk about pre-apprenticeship, apprenticeship, internships, school-based enterprises, and projects that businesses are offering our students. I think we can take that, do a better job of instituting more competency-based learning within our schools. How can we tie the construction trades to our math classes? How can we create kind of that blend with what we know workforce and industry needs with what we're learning or what we're teaching to our students? I think oftentimes one of my biggest aha moments as an educator was I realized that I was creating tomorrow's workforce in my school. And we took pride in that. But the only way that we could do that was by listening to industry tell us what they needed and then building for them, because we're building for their workforce. And so my aha moment was really when I listened to them and understood in depth what industry needed within my community and tried to help foster that community perspective.
Yeah, it is such a, we need both, right? Yep. We need our business community and our education community to be working together.
Yeah,
absolutely. So according to Iowa's area education agencies, the number of students exiting high school without a post-secondary plan continues to grow every year, while the number of students who enroll in a post-secondary training program is declining. What can communities do to reverse this trajectory?
Once again, I think it's early understanding. It's a K-12 concept that, you know, whether it's K-6, you're looking at developing the core skills and including the, and when I say core skills, you're talking about that collaboration, that communication, those pieces, into everyday conversations. It goes back to building habits and understanding what is happening out there. So if we're teaching a lesson and we're doing some group work, we utilize the language and the terminology to understand, so students understand, well, this is what good collaboration looks like at a very young age. And we create that system all the way through and then start influxing more and more industry, more business, you know, whether it's the shadows, the career fairs, the exploration pieces. And then once we get into high school, we're getting more into training and getting into pathways. But I think we have to continue to talk about it more. And it can't just be a CTE problem. It needs to be a core problem. Everybody has, you know, everybody has the responsibility to get students into, you know, a high paying career field and to be post-secondary successful. So I think that's the main thing, is that everybody has to be going down the same path with the same terminology. And that's industry and education. It has to blend both ways. Because I think when you talk about a registered apprenticeship and we're talking about related training instruction, some people are like, what does that mean? Well, it's the coursework, it's the learning. And so we have to get everybody to talk the same lingo.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. That kind of connects to our next question. So explain to our listeners the concept of a registered apprenticeships and the value that they have.
I think the biggest value is that you're creating a program that's an earn while you learn type of program. So students have the opportunity to have on-the-job training that they're getting paid for at the same time that they're getting the coursework or the related training instruction. I think one of the things that does is, you know, that single mother or that student that comes from low economic type of situation that can't necessarily afford to go to college or go to a 2-year because they have to help support their family. All of a sudden you're creating a bridge where you're allowing those students to have a good, well-paying job that also shows increases as they are successful in their program. And then they're also getting the related training instruction at the same time. And so I think one of the advantages of that, and I think you can see it in many instances, they just might not call it a registered apprenticeship. If you think about what a doctor does when they're doing rotations, you know, they front load the related training instruction with a course, all the coursework, and then they go and they do a rotation, real life application. It's the same concept all around. We see it. It's just not necessarily called a registered apprenticeship, right? A registered apprenticeship allows for the application of what's learning. And I think that's the biggest advantage. And if you look at countries all over the world, you know, those are options and really good supported options for success for other countries. And I think that's something that we need to continue to look at and continue to hone in on, that provides various options for all of our students in general.
So what are some of those most in-demand apprenticeships in Iowa?
Right now, obviously, trades is a hot topic one, where you're looking at, you know, carpentry, you're looking at welding. You know, those are common ones that we see. But also, within the last few years, we've seen over 30 new occupations within registered apprenticeship. So you can talk about your nursing, your CNAs, your LPNs. RN was just identified as a possible registered apprenticeship program. So we're looking at that. We're looking at the robotics, manufacturing, information technology, those type of programs. You know, any of the high demand fields, like if you look at the top 25, there was, I believe, 7 that were in the nursing areas. Those are very common. But yeah, high schools, a lot of high schools have gone towards welding. You know, we're still looking at the trades, but we're also looking at healthcare, teacher educator, with a teacher paraeducator program. That's another high demand field, obviously. And we continue to evolve with that. And just recently, and one that I would love to work on is a pre-K 12 principal licensure. A state actually has done that with a registered apprenticeship program too. And so how can we continue to fill gaps where there's needed? Obviously, administration, educators, those are things that we need. And so how can we be innovative within the space to help train our future educators?
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that about an administrator. And yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. So how does a registered apprenticeship, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but how does a registered apprenticeship differ from a traditional job? And what benefits then does it offer our students or those who participate?
I think the main aspect of a registered apprenticeship is the depth of learning that you're going to get. So you're taking the training aspect or that related training instruction, then applying it with a one-on-one mentor. And so anybody in education knows that when you dwindle down the number, the ratio of people with a journey worker or a mentor of sorts, the level of learning goes up. And so I think when you look at a registered apprenticeship program, you have that one-on-one mentor, as well as that in-depth related training instruction. Now, it's not like the mentor is sitting by them 24/7. It's, you know, it's a guided learning, gradual release of responsibility. So you have, you know, the mentors doing it, shows the mentee or the worker, the apprentice, and then they do it together, and then the mentor allows the apprentice to do it. And so I think the basis of that is just, I mean, if we look at education in general, we know that there's a lot of positives when it comes to that type of learning. And I think that's where, you know, you're looking at industry standards that have been signed off nationwide as a common practice for that industry. So the standards are high. It's industry driven. So we know that it goes with a business, and it has that high level of integrity to be able to provide that learning for that mentor or for that apprentice.
Yeah, definitely. So you know of some of the programs that are happening across the state of Iowa. So can you share some of those success stories with our listeners?
Absolutely. Well, we've had a lot of different success stories. Obviously, one of the biggest ones right now when it comes to a business that has seen a lot of success within registered apprenticeship, you look at John Deere. They currently have 71 apprentices, whether that's welding. They've got a couple of other occupations that they tie into also, and they're kind of all over the state. And so kind of looking at them as a leader in the space is common practice. We all kind of talk about John Deere. But you also can look at the different school districts that are doing amazing things. The Davenport School District has done some great things, have multiple occupations. They've got a teacher para educator program that's really dynamic. They also partner with the John Deere apprenticeship programs. I think you can also look at school districts that have a wide variety of work-based learning in general. Whether you're looking at like Boone with the Boone Edge program, you know, they have a pre-apprenticeship with ABC of Iowa and the construction trades with partners like Fairway and Kruk and Pritchard Brothers. You look at their apprenticeship program that's a meat cutting registered apprenticeship that's been scaled in other districts. So it's not only like we're not keeping it for ourselves, we're going to share it out. You can look at West Des Moines, you can look at Waukee doing some great things with work-based learning. There's a lot of great things going on. I think one fun example for school administrators to think about is you're your own business. ADM has a computer specialist registered apprenticeship program, and that program is specifically designed for a student to get involved with their technology department. So they do a lot of like Google Education training, So that student then can also help support teachers with the education on their technology, as well as in the summers, they're hiring that, or that person, that apprentice is actually working on their computers on their one-to-one program and things like that. So I think there's a lot of really creative ways of doing things. I can even think of a school district that's doing some marketing, a marketing program with a student for their district. So there's a lot of different avenues. Like I said, there's 1,500 occupations to choose from, and really the sky's the limit. And how innovative and creative do you want to be within that space?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing up, you know, schools are a business as well. I think sometimes, as I've heard, the challenge is, well, we just don't have a lot of business in our community. And we don't think often, right, about right in our own backyard. So yeah, thanks for reminding our listeners about that.
Well, and sometimes those schools are the largest employers in those towns. And right. So to think of, you know, just thinking about diesel mechanic, accounting, marketing, whether it's culinary in the foods, whether it's a paraeducator, there are so many options for kids to be able to support their own within their own community. I think sometimes we forget about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for reminding the listeners about that. Appreciate that. So maybe we've kind of started down this path, but what are the challenges that you believe are faced in implementing a registered apprenticeship or work-based learning program? And then any ideas on how we can overcome those challenges?
I think sometimes, you know, we've made adjustments when it comes to legislation, when we've made looking at different types of rules and things that are out there that are reflective on an old style of education. We continue to evolve, we continue to change, and we need to be able to modify and change as needed. So, you know, I think looking at the time aspects of education, registered apprenticeship doesn't necessarily fit the mold of your, 1,080 hours of schooling. It actually falls outside of that. And so oftentimes we talk a lot about, you know, administrators look at it as, well, they need to be done by graduation. Well, no, they don't. And a registered apprenticeship could keep going. There could be a soft handoff to a business and that person could keep going post-graduation. So I think the aspects of time, the competency-based pieces that could be out there, I think more and more, I think one of the biggest challenges is how do we start looking at ways to mold our educational system to fit with what our students are going to be challenged to partake in when they leave our schools. It's not an A, B, C, D, E, F type of program, right? It's competency-based, to be honest. You know, they're looking at standards. They're expecting you to perform at a certain level. And we do it even in our evaluations as administrators. And so how do we continue to evolve our practices to allow for our students to show what they know and show it in many different ways? With the evolution of technology and things like that, I think it's probably easier than it's ever been. But I think sometimes we have to be able to and willing to get out of our own way to be able to really challenge the status quo. And I think that's where, as educators, we'll continue to evolve. And I think it's happening all over the place. We need to continue to talk about the rules and the complications that we have because of some rules that we can make adjustments to. And then I think it's also very important to educate parents and students that this is kind of the way of life and relate it back. I understand you've been, and this would be one of my examples. I know that you've been through school, you know, in the 80s and 90s, and that's the way it used to be, but that's not necessarily the way the world is right now. And so being able to change and become, you know, evolve to the needs of what industry and occupations are asking for.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to kind of reimagine our own thinking as well as what school should and
It was
sound like?
It was like, I remember the SAI conference where Eric Wall was at to unthink education. I think we're still in that area where we need to continue to unthink what we're doing.
Yeah, agreed. So when you think about in this space, whether it's work-based learning, pre-apprenticeships, registered apprenticeship programs, what are some of those best practices for employers and schools so that they work together to make this a reality for their students?
Well, obviously, it comes down to really great communication and strong collaboration. I think one of the things that for educators is to take an opportunity to listen to what the needs are. I think it's also important to bring a lot of different facets of the community and to get it involved. It genuinely starts with the foundational work that is out there. So the foundational work that I think really needs to happen is when you're looking at the portrait of a graduate's, what are our students going to look like when they leave our environment? And that's not an environment that starts in ninth grade. It's the ones that start in kindergarten and start to develop those habits all the way through. And so, you know, the best practices that I've seen are the ones that the community is actively involved, the parents are actively involved, the teachers, the administrators, the industry, everybody is at the table having a discussion and breaking down ultimately what they want from their students when they leave. And then how can those students then support the community? And I think, honestly, when you're looking at rural America kind of, you know, dwindling, that's one of your biggest assets is how can you keep them by understanding what the community needs and building to what the community needs so that you can keep people in your area. And that happens anywhere. I mean, obviously urban needs the same thing, but I think the best practices that I've seen are when communities completely buy into a program. And I'm talking a holistic program that understands what our kids need to have when they graduate to better support the needs of the community themselves.
Yeah, Chris, one of the things I heard you say was, you know, sitting down together, educators listening to what the needs of our businesses are, which made me then think about externships that are available. So how does an externship fit into this whole conversation, or does it?
It 1000% does. I honestly feel that teacher prep programs should have externship programs involved with it. Because once again, I think it's such an important aspect of things that if you think about a student going K-12, graduating, then going on to UNI or Iowa or Iowa State or Drake and getting an education degree. Besides working at Hy-Vee or the bagel shop or whatever, where is it related to real world application in, you know, in business in general, whether it's the trades or, you know, Principal Financial or John Deere or whatever? There's no correlation there. And so I got to sit in with the STEM externships at the end of their programs, and both sides were just ranting and raving. I never knew that, you know, this was something that happened, or I never knew the teachers were saying that. And then you talk about the businesses, then getting a genuine understanding of what educators are going through, what educators can provide. And I think then that relation then goes back to the students and say, you know, you can wholeheartedly say in that connection in the classroom, you know, I think it's so important to understand what is out there, and then bringing that back to bring it to life for the students is such an important factor. And I think it'd be something either administrators, teachers, teacher prep programs, like the more that we can do things like that and all come together with a common understanding. And I would flip it the other way too. How often have we said, invited businesses besides for shadows or for career fairs or whatever, how many times have we invited them in to support or teach or to be a part of a classroom to understand what's going on in educators' world? Even if you brought them in before the school year to see what teachers go through with a professional development day. And I know that they have, you know, a ton of things going on, but even for a couple of hours to understand at a deeper understanding of what teachers are going through, I think it just levels the playing field.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I remember in my previous life, a few teachers that took advantage of the externships and how that experience profoundly impacted what them for the classroom. And, you know, they redid lots of different things in the classroom to make sure that they were having their content relevant. And then I also, as you were talking, Chris, think about, I think we've done a pre-K through 12, done a pretty good job of, in the CTE world, the career technical ed world, bringing those businesses in and getting feedback from those. But in your comments, making me think about how have we done that, if at all, around like our core math, language arts, social studies, et cetera.
Well, and they have a huge, obviously a huge influence and an impact on our students. How do they correlate? And one of the things that we continually were talking about was, can we incorporate those in the lesson plan? So like if we're teaching a Romeo and Juliet and we're doing collaboration, how do we bring that to the forefront so that the students understand, okay, some of my English teachers would be upset. Like, how do you, it does, sometimes Romeo and Juliet won't correlate to the real world, but you can create that correlation by saying, well, in the real world, we've got to talk about these type of things and then come up with a solution or come up with a presentation or come up with whatever. So that correlates to real world application down the road. And so I think oftentimes we forget that they're just as impactful as anybody. And I had a social studies teacher that believed in that and helped with a fantastic kind of an internship program for one of my seniors her last year. And, you know, she was a page down at the Capitol and worked for, did a legal analysis at Fairway for corporate law, and then went into Iowa State and saw political science. And so like three different aspects of what law was. You know, that social studies teacher helped put that together. So that creativity and that impact for that student was huge.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So as we talk about these opportunities, is this something that can happen, that can be implemented regardless of school size or school location? I know sometimes as I've traveled the state this past year, I hear more challenges when I'm talking with some of our rural schools versus, you know, our urban suburban schools.
I think honestly, it can happen anywhere. I think if you start maybe doing an assessment of where you are as a district, you would probably find out that you have more in work-based learning than you know. And then you understand where the holes and where the gaps are and fill it there. You know, I think also with technology and the way that technology is now, you can do Zooms, you can partner with computer businesses, you know, technology, create products for businesses that don't have to be sitting in your backyard. You know, it's all in how creative you want to get, who you want to reach out to, and show that you're willing to support. I've seen more and more even on posts recently of kids having discussions with some pretty high up, that we would say high up type of products and businesses, and those businesses respond to our students, you know, whether they send them like a care gift package and thanks for the support, or, you know, here's a project, will you talk to us about this marketing aspect of things? We need your support, whatever. I think it's just how creative that you want to be. So, you know, I think you can do a needs assessment throughout your whole district, but I think once you do that, then where are the gaps and how can you fill those gaps?
So if a superintendent or any level of administrator is listening to this and wonders who to go to, they haven't really started this work, or maybe they have some but want to expand, who would they go to? Who would they consult with for assistance in either expanding or starting work-based learning and or apprenticeships?
Well, I would urge them to get a hold of myself or Linda Fandel. I think we have great partnerships with the Department of Ed. So we try to base ourselves on connectors, like how can we connect to the places that we need. But, you know, when you're looking at pre-apprenticeship, apprenticeships, things like that, talking about work-based learning, I mean, we have a gamut of opportunity to help and support however we can. We want to continue to help build and mold the work-based learning programs that are out there. You know, even if they have questions like, hey, we have these things, but we haven't been able to really lift it off the ground. You know, how can we do that? We can have conversations about that and try to connect all the people that are needed.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you for that. So, Chris, what haven't I asked you that our listeners really need to know?
I think the main thing ultimately is understanding that education in general is trying to open as many pathways as possible. And our students need to have options. You know, we've taken a lot of, while I was a principal, and they currently still do it, you know, we provided the ACT for our students. Why? Because not all of them could afford it, and we weren't guaranteed that they were all going to do it. Why? Because they had that feather in their cap to be able to go to college if they needed to, because they didn't have to take the ACT. But I think it's also our responsibility to open doors to various pathways that are at the same level, whether it's, you know, the registered apprenticeship, there's a lot of very professional avenues in there, pre-apprenticeship, all those type of things with projects and whatever. But I think it's so important to have a well-rounded work-based learning program to really be able to support all the different various pathways that a kid needs to have in order to be successful.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think about going back to the very beginning of this session where we were talking about lifestyle. So I think the conversation is so different today than it used to be. So really trying to determine what is the lifestyle that a student wants to have, what are their strengths, where do their passions lie? And then, as you said, connecting with, here are multiple opportunities, and let them kind of do some exploration at that younger age before they determine that post-secondary path that they may take, whether that is apprenticeship program, 2-year college, 4-year college, military, whatever that path is, but making sure that Iowa students understand there are multiple pathways, not only one pathway to success.
And so, none of them are better than any other. I think that's right. The main thing is that find your passion and go for your passion. You know, there's many on-ramps and off-ramps to all these things. I'm not necessarily working in what my degree was. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important that you can go in and out as needed, and that we can help support them and foster that growth.
Yeah. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being with us today and for the work that you're doing at the state to help really move this work forward and to open up pathways for Iowa students. So thank you so much.
I appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Be sure to join us for the next episode as we welcome Justin Wagner, superintendent at Woodbine Community Schools and Ignite Pathways Regional Center, and Ethan Wichman, Cedar Falls CAPS director.